Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic.
Hello and welcome to this week's Tate Talks, where I had a fantastic chat with Brian Byrne of Mesh. Really hope you enjoy it. He's one of the nicest men in the channel, but obviously no nicer than any of my previous guests, but you get the point, so enjoy. Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Tate Talks. How are you doing?
I'm good, Chris. Yeah, thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure to finally come on and have a chat. I've been listening to your podcast now for, how long are they going? A couple of years, maybe?
Yeah, a few years, yeah. I took a bit of a gap, but we've started up again. So, yeah, there's probably about a dozen episodes, I think, now, something along those lines.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah, yeah. I've listened to all of them. Yeah, so thanks for having me on.
Okay, which case you'll be very familiar with the sort of super rigid stroke easy format that I use for this. So that shouldn't be too difficult. So before you get going, I mean, I've known you for quite a long time in the channel, actually, through different roles, which has always been good fun to see you on the road and things. But for those who don't know about you, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Brian Byrne, co-founder, CEO of Mesh. Mesh is an email security platform specifically built for MSPs. And we founded it in 2020, so born in the pandemic, and it's the third email security company I've worked for, first time founder though.
Okay, that's good. Well, I guess that takes us into the next section, sort of. How did you get here in terms of what was your, I mean, you're a relatively young man, so I guess you've probably not got so much a background as maybe the I would have, but you know, what did your career look like before and how did you get into the MSP space?
Yeah, completely by chance. I'm guessing I've probably had a more unusual route into this space than a lot of your guests. I don't want to spend too much time going down the rabbit hole or tell you my whole life story. So finished secondary school, quite immature, kind of wanted to be a professional footballer. That was never going to happen. And anything after that, you know, wasn't really excited or ambitious to do. So I left college after 2 hours, I think. I was like, don't want to do this. I'd rather get out and earn money. So I went into an apprenticeship as an electrician, which I never, ever should have done. Wasn't naturally skilled for it. The money was good at the start. And the kind of thinking was, get a trade, work anywhere, you'll always have work, blah, blah, blah. That was in 2005. And then 2008, the recession hit and the construction industry here in Ireland completely collapsed. So spent a lot of time then, kind of months where you'd be laid off in between jobs, and cut a long story short, a 4-year electrical apprenticeship is supposed to be ran on for, I guess, 7. And I never actually completed it. So I was kind of picking up jobs here and there and got a job in the passport office, kind of seasonal work in Ireland, because it was in the town in which I live. And that was the first time I'd worked in an office. Now, I've had a whole host of other jobs, but it was the first kind of office environment. I was like, oh, I'm probably more suited to this than, you know, being on a cold building site in a shell of a building with somebody screaming at you to work quicker while you're standing up a ladder. Yeah, I didn't really like that. And working in the passport office, I kind of got my first experience of what it looks like to try and deliver a service to a customer and find a lot of things that you think, well, that could be improved upon. And I didn't realize that at the time, but that kind of influenced my thinking going up. I like to try and get involved in processes that deliver better outcomes for customers. Anyway, from there, so that was a seasonal job. And when it was finishing up, literally next door in the business park was an email security company. That email security company was called MX Sweep, and they were recruiting for a telemarketer, so basically a cold caller. And I went in for an interview. I didn't know anything about email security at the time. I know a little bit more now. And that was it. So I got that job, and I was tasked with, you know, making 100 calls a day to mainly people who didn't want to talk to me. But where it differed, say, from being on a building site and trying to solve challenges faced in the electrical world, where I felt my mind didn't naturally kind of come up with solutions for this, very quickly then I discovered, no, actually, I'm much more at home with this and kind of dealing with people. And yeah, it kind of progressed from there to account manager, channel manager, and MX Sweep. I doubt any of your listeners have heard of that company before, but it was set up in, I think, 2006, and it was founded actually by Danny Jenkins, who founded Threatlocker. Now, Danny had left MX Sweep before I joined, so he was long gone at that point. But it got acquired then in 2014 by Fuse Mail, and I got made redundant. So that was my first taste of redundancy through acquisition, and it wouldn't be the last. So from there, I went to Email Laundry, became a channel manager, and then kind of head of sales. And that's where I really learned about the industry and MSPs. And then, yeah, it got acquired again. Big US company came in and bought it. And from there, we decided to set up Mesh. So, yeah, long-winded answer to your question. But, yeah, I was never kind of involved in tech and just walked in a door for a job because it was local. And, yeah, kind of sent me on the right path after that.
Wow, that's great. And I'm old enough to remember MX Sweep, obviously. And and I did know the Danny Jenkins link, but I'd kind of forgotten it. So thanks for reminding me about that. Interestingly as well, like the previous podcast I've recorded only last week with Mikey Pruitt at DNS Filter, who you may have come across. He's also a certified electrician. So if you're ever at an event, you can talk, you know, electricity or whatever you guys chat about. But he had a similar background. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I haven't met anyone in this space yet with that. So yeah, I'll keep an eye out. From certainly familiar with DNS Filter.
Absolutely. So obviously you mentioned that you went through that route and sort of founded Mesh, which is where you are now. So for those that aren't familiar with Mesh, I guess they're probably, with your background, have probably got a pretty good idea that it's in email security. But could you sort of tell us a little about Mesh and sort of what makes you different?
Yeah, there were kind of two things we recognized from, you know, dealing with MSPs for years at Email Laundry that we felt weren't being addressed or that MSPs were kind of crying out for. One of them was just kind of genuine multi-tenancy or across-tenanted capabilities. You know, I'm an MSP, I've got 100 different customers, and there's something I want to update for all of them. Existing email security solutions kind of predate MSP and were built for enterprise and therefore require updates and changes to be made on a per client basis. You know, so 100 customers where you want to, I don't know, block a particular sender or allow an IP address could take a couple of hours, whereas Mesh, it takes 5 seconds. So that kind of operational efficiency, we thought, well, that's something that is severely lacking in email security. And then the second one was around how email security is implemented or deployed. And there's been a bit of a shift, I guess, the last 6, 7, 8 years, mainly since the migration of email to the cloud, predominantly Microsoft, but also a little bit of Google. And these email security vendors were cropping up that were API-based rather than MX record based, right? So instead of your traditional email security gateway at the perimeter, they were connecting into the mailbox. And we were finding that MSPs were actually doubling up. So, you know, we'd speak to MSPs who were using an email security gateway from one provider and then using an API based solution from a completely other provider. And essentially everything was doubled then, right? So they were providing email security, but they were having to onboard customers in two platforms. They were having to look for email in two places, deal with two separate support teams, and their costs were pretty much doubled. And all of this was compounded by the first challenge, as I said, that we looked to address was They're not really multi-tenanted or cross-tenanted. So that's what we wanted to create, was the flexibility of deployment. If you want an email security gateway, great, we can give you that. If you want an API-based solution that integrates into Microsoft, we can give you that. And if you're the type of MSP that's currently doubling up in them, well, you've got an all-in-one solution with Mesh, and you've got unique cross-tenancy features for MSPs that other products don't have. So that was the idea, is to do both of those and do it well. And we've been bootstrapping it since we founded the company in 2020, up until yesterday when we announced the closing of our seed round. So it's taken us a while to get to where we're at currently, but things have been going very well so far.
Yeah, very much. And congratulations on that seed round. I'm sure we're going to see an acceleration of sort of change from you, which is exciting. Moving on to the next question, and you've just given a challenge. I was going to ask, what are the sort of bigger challenges you're seeing MSPs facing? And you've already identified one there, which is one that we talk about a little, which is tool sprawl or duplication of kind of buying multiple tools to do the same thing, which I guess we're seeing a lot of MSPs are probably suffering from as well. But I mean, what other challenges do you see MSPs facing or vendors facing as we head into the second half of 2023?
Yeah, on the MSP side, like, I think there's some common challenges, right? The big one is recruitment, which everyone talks about. I think for us here in Dublin, because of Ireland's generous corporation tax, all of the big tech companies headquarter their European operations here, right? So we're competing with them for talent. I think finding the right people is our biggest challenge, and it comes up time and time again with every MSP I speak to. I think following the pandemic, there was kind of a double-edged sword with moving to remote working, in terms of, yes, you could attract talent from further afield, but also so could the larger companies, right? So for example, we have an MSP in South Dakota, pretty rural MSP in a town of whatever size it is, 20,000 people. And they were starting to lose some of their staff to Microsoft, who headquartered in Seattle, but were allowing staff to remain working remotely. So MSPs, particularly in less urban areas, who probably had a certain pool of talent that they could hire from, are now competing with the behemoths of the industry for that talent. And that's difficult. I guess one of the other challenges is just around how you grow. So a lot of MSPs I speak to are stagnating somewhat, and the larger MSPs are probably growing through M&A more than anything else, right? And that feels, you know, if you're an MSP of a certain size, M&A probably seems unrealistic and beyond you. So I think growth is certainly a challenge for MSPs too. And then maybe vendor fatigue, you know, there's more and more vendors setting up to either go directly after the MSP space, or vendors that were maybe enterprise focused now pivoting. And I think, yeah, it can be hard as an MSP to even know where to turn for a particular product, because you're overwhelmed by choice.
No, I've just been making some notes there because I agree with those. The recruitment is something that comes up in pretty much every podcast, as you've probably heard. It's a challenge for MSPs and vendors, and for the exact reasons that you described, which is really difficult. MSPs stagnating. There is an awful lot of M&A activity in the marketplace, but at the smaller MSP, as you write, it probably seems a little distant at the minute, just if they're a little bit younger. And I guess it's how they can grow those is a challenge, which is where the old sort of sales and marketing and positioning the MSP standing out in the marketplace becomes difficult for MSPs. But the vendor fatigue is an interesting one as well. I was chatting to, I think on a previous podcast, where we're talking about the old days when you know your IT security, if you're an MSP, the only security you need to worry about really was a firewall and some kind of antivirus product. And it was like, yeah, you'd have to pick two vendors Now you go to a trade show, and I know that we're both at DattoCon next week, is, you know, there's going to be hundreds of vendors there in the room with kind of different security solutions that didn't exist or didn't need to exist probably a couple of years ago. And it's trying to work out which ones you need to go, which ones you don't. It's much more challenging now running an MSP than it was in my day, put it that way.
100%. And, you know, so I've been in the space for, 11 years now. And I used to kind of think there was a point probably around 2017, 18, where I felt I knew all of the vendors that were going to be in the room at events. And now, DattoCon next week, there will probably be, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 vendors that I've never come across previously. And it just feels like new ones are popping up all the time. So I would expect as an MSP, it's overwhelming and try and determine what you actually need, what your customers need, what can you sell, is difficult. And you know, sometimes you might just want to put up the shutters a little bit to some of the newer ones, just because you're tired of it. But I think the challenges are increasing, I would say. And M&A, I feel, plays a part in that. You know, if you listen to some of the larger MSPs, they're basically telling the smaller guys, you know, it's either sell out or you're going to be eaten up. And I think the requirements for cybersecurity are intertwined with that, right? So if you're a large MSP, it's very easy for you to make the case to a business that your smaller MSP can't protect you in the same way. And I see some of that going on as well.
Oh, okay. That's not cool. Because I guess that is a powerful argument, but a lot of the small MSPs should be able to do that and probably can do that, but it's difficult to put a counter argument. So, okay, that's interesting. And I guess one of the challenges that you, and this is talking to you, I guess, with our respective vendor hats on, is one of our challenges is trying to find a way to cut through that noise to get to speak to prospects and to MSPs about our offerings and services, and then what's new and what's updating, because MSPs must be getting bombarded. I do feel for them for a certain extent. So, for example, next week, again, at DattoCon, an MSP is going to go and walk, enter the prize drawer at all of these vendors, and then probably the first day back on the Monday morning, they're going to get like 60 emails from every vendor and every sponsor of the event, which is difficult for them to filter out.
Yeah, it's something that, so us being currently, still a startup, we don't have a ton of resources and therefore we don't bombard anyone. And this is the first big event that we'll have sponsored at Mesh. So all of our kind of growth so far has been organic. So in terms of us cutting through noise, we don't really have to, or it's kind of happening in a way that's natural in terms of particularly in MSP forums and things like that. When people are asking a question around email security, there's several MSPs now that have adopted Mesh who are willing to champion it and are answering those. So we actually, aside from this sponsorship next week, we don't spend on marketing so far. So it's not really a challenge in terms of cutting through noise that I've spent too much time on. We don't really send external emails, maybe one a month. So I think that can work in your favor to an extent in terms of we'll only send something out if we think we have something meaningful to share. Similarly on social media, like on LinkedIn, we'll be pretty limited on what we'll post. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but when you're and you must be, Chris, I'm sure you've got your own LinkedIn page for Totally MSP, but when you're an admin on a LinkedIn page, it kind of shows you your competitors and how often they post and things like that, and their growth and things like when it comes to followers. We're at the bottom of that list for posts all the time. But I see some of our competitors who will share 10 posts a day, and I think, you know, it's generating noise, and as you said, you want to cut through that. So we kind of keep it minimal. We'll say something when we have something meaningful to say, and I think MSPs can appreciate that. It's a less pressured approach, I think, is what we take at Mesh, because as I said, we don't have the resources to go hard on sales.
No, but I like that. And it reminded me, I will log on to the Totally MSP page and see what my whoever my competitors are, what they're doing. So
yeah, our growth it tends to be in the middle, bizarrely, for, you know, and that's why I think it almost works by not overdoing it. We'll be third or fourth in terms of growth for new followers. But when you look at number of posts, it'll probably say 4 or 5 for a month, and others will be 200. But yeah, I kind of interrupted you there. Apologies.
No, it is fascinating, and it's a really interesting approach. But moving along, so this could be MSPs based, it could be not. I guess it depends how you spend your spare time. But I mean, what do you listen to, books or podcasts, or do you prefer to unwind with TV or video games? I mean, what do you do to relax or to?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, right? So I was listening to your previous season, and the ones that stuck out in my head were Vicky Bruins and Matt Tarker. Vicky with, was it blind donkeys or something that she had in a stable, and Matt was training a parakeet or something to talk. Craig Atkins was on previously, who I'm a big fan of, and he races cars in his spare time. So today I was looking at all your episodes in prep for this, and there was one that I hadn't listened to. I'd somehow missed it, and it was Greg Jones. So when you asked him the question, what's he doing in his spare time? And he initially said, I'm so busy that I don't get a whole lot of downtime. I was like, oh, okay, good. There's a boring answer like that I'm going to give. And then he says, oh, but I am into snowboarding, more specifically heliboarding, where you jump out of a jump out of a helicopter on a snowboard. And I thought, so my fear was coming on that I wasn't going to have a really interesting answer to this. And I guess I don't. Set up mesh during the pandemic, so while everyone was in lockdown, also had a little boy at the back end of 2020. So when you become a founder and a father within literally a few weeks of each other, there's not a whole lot of time to do anything else. We've probably spoken about this over the years, I did play football, not at a very high level, but competitively, and injury has kind of curtailed my career there. I'm still kind of itching to get back and play, and I'm kind of working on I've got dodgy ankles, working on those to see if I can make a return. But unfortunately mesh kind of dominates all of my time. It's, you know, I think if every founder is honest, it's hard to switch off from it, you know, even at weekends and stuff, there's always something going on. Back at the email laundry, when I did a lot of travel, I guess one of my hobbies was trying to combine that travel with kind of football tourism. So getting a match into wherever I was going, right? So I can remember you asked me to sponsor, or would I like to sponsor, DatoCon 2018 in Barcelona. And I looked up the fixture list, and it was like Real Madrid, Barcelona on the day before the event. And I was like, I'm in. So things like that. I used to do a lot of travel back before the pandemic. And that would have been probably my number one hobby, combining my passion for football with my passion for travel. But a lot's changed since 2020.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. And I do know, obviously, one of your pastimes is watching football still, because I know you're a big West Ham United fan. So congratulations on the European trophy the other week, which was exciting and a good game as well. So that was really good, really nice to see.
Yeah. Never thought I'd see the day where West Ham won a European final. Not in my lifetime, but there we go. Love still watching football when I can. But I've not been to a game in the flesh in quite some time. So that's something I need to remedy sometime soon. Maybe there'll be an event in I know what it is actually. So CaseyaCon, DatoCon, the US version of that in Miami. I think it's in September or October, and I'm a big Lionel Messi fan, so now that he's gone to Inter Miami, I might try and get an Inter Miami game in at that event. I know tickets will cost a fortune, but I need to start looking into that.
Yeah, that would be cool. And thanks for referencing some of the previous answers to this, because I've made some notes here. So Craig's a friend of mine. I think he was the second podcast I ever recorded, I believe. I think the one was with Scott Tyson. And I forget, well, it was Orvik at the time. But what Craig is less, he talks a lot about his motor racing, but what he talks about less is that he also plays bowls. So he's kind of gone from one extreme to the other. So I like to remind people that he's also a big bowling fan. I don't know whether it's sort of crown green or flat bowling, but you'll often see him with his white trousers throwing a little ball down a section of grass on a Saturday afternoon.
Ah, very nice. I didn't know that about Craig, even though I did listen to that episode. I guess it was some time ago. I was recently in Canada and I played bocce ball for the first time, which I guess is kind of similar, where you throw out a smaller ball like a jack and then you're throwing larger, heavier balls to get as close to it.
That sounds, sounds the same.
Yeah, so kind of like bowls, but maybe without the, like you just play it in the garden and without the kind of rigid, you wouldn't call it a pitch. What would you call it?
I think it's a rink? I think
maybe a rink. Yeah.
I don't know. Let's hope Craig can put us right on some of the terminology.
Yeah, he can get in touch. Answers on a postcard.
Absolutely. And Greg, yeah, again, I had no idea what heliboarding was until he casually threw it into conversation. So I had to go and Google that. But I think, like you, one of my favorites is Vicky's with the sort of donkey sanctuary kind of thing, difficult day at work, and then just go outside and you've got a bunch of donkeys there. I guess that's quite a good way to wind down and to relieve any stress that you had.
Yeah, for sure. I'm lucky in that. So I live in a seaside town just north of Dublin. And the other side of my apartment is looking kind of onto the sea. So the beach is like a 2-3 minute walk. And the last couple of weeks, the weather's been particularly nice. So I get to the beach every other day this time of year. Not that you could call it a hobby so much, but it's nice for clearing the head and unwinding, whether it be evening time or early morning. It's always nice to get down there. It's too cold for me to get in and swim. I do have friends that get in and take the dip regularly, but I'll maybe get in once, twice a year. Far too cold. And when it gets that little bit warmer, you tend to get jellyfish coming in as well. And I don't want to take my chances there.
Okay, I was about to say it may be good for the ankles until you mentioned the jellyfish part, so maybe not such a good idea.
Dipping the ankles in is fine, and you're right, it is good for the ankles, but actually getting in is the part where I draw the line. Ankles any time of the year, put them in, but actually going in for a proper swim, no way. One of my friends was in there last week actually, and a seal got very close to him, so that was another reason I thought, that's not for me.
Right. Okay. We've just got time for a couple of quick questions. The first one is, I'm guessing, if you're starting your career again, what advice would you give yourself? I'm guessing it's going to be don't bother registering for college for 2 hours. I mean, that's probably, give that a miss.
Yeah. I, to be honest, I probably would go back and do college, not for anything specific, but just I think it would have been a fun 4 or 5 years rather than going straight into a kind of horrible work environment that was construction that I wasn't good at. It probably would be to get a job in sales as early as possible, because it just felt like a natural fit pretty quickly. That would be my advice for my 18-year-old self. Buy Bitcoin would be maybe another one. Everybody could say that in hindsight. I think if I was to go back and do it again, I probably would do college and then become an entrepreneur. That's the fun part of what I do, is actually been able to come up with solutions based on, perceived challenges that we come across all the time. I'd have encouraged myself to maybe have tried to set up a company that bit earlier.
Okay, cool. And the final question, and this is where I ask you for a tip. I mean, the majority of audience listeners will be MSPs, some vendors, but I guess mainly MSPs. So, I mean, have you got a kind of tip that you could give them? I know that everyone's offering tips all the time, right? And whether anyone listens to them, I don't know. But I mean, what tip would you offer to MSPs to help them with their business?
Yeah, I recently heard quite an interesting one, right? And this was an MSP who said that they had created a template or kind of a list of questions for an end customer to ask their incumbent MSP. And they were deliberately created in a way that would lead that end customer to discover, actually, got a bunch of shortcomings with this MSP and would look favorably on the new MSP that created the template. Now, I know that's a bit wishy-washy because I don't know what's actually in the template, but it was an interesting way to think about the challenge in terms of almost providing leading questions that you know other MSPs are going to struggle to answer correctly, and that's going to then prompt a, well, why aren't you doing this for us kind of thing. That was one. I see so many MSP, I don't know if you'd call them influencers, but almost consultants or experts, people who've sold their MSP and are now offering that kind of tutoring or management. And they've got tons of tips. One of them that resonates with me is probably the video creation, you know, using video as a medium. I see some MSPs that do that really, really well, and they seem to generate a lot of business from it. Now, like any kind of tip like that, it will eventually become overdone and you'll need to create a new way to differentiate. But that would be one I would think is still relatively underused by MSPs. I don't see a ton of MSPs putting videos out regularly that are, you know, high quality, well edited, and use analogies that enable, you know, the average person to understand what the technical problem is that they're solving. I see one MSP comes to mind that does that really, really well. And I would be surprised if more MSPs aren't emulating them. And then lastly, it would be to get out and see what's going on at events, learn from your peers, join peer groups. I know there's nothing new and this is a tip, but I speak to MSPs of all shapes and sizes day in, day out. And I do find the ones that tend to be stagnating or losing customers are maybe a little bit insular or closed off and don't maybe expose themselves to new ideas in terms of, you know, I could know them for 7-8 years and I've never seen them at an event. They don't go, they don't get involved in peer groups. So I think there's a lot of value in that, which, you know, MSPs that are already involved in them know. But for MSPs who aren't listening, I do think looking at what even your competitors are doing is useful, because you know, somebody's going to innovate and come up with a nugget that you can gain inspiration from and use in your business. And peer groups, I've not met an MSP involved in a peer group that doesn't get tremendous value from it. So yeah, that would be my advice. And I know I'm kind of regurgitating what probably other people say.
No, fantastic. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of events. But I think with this great deal of education, but peer groups especially, or sort of peer groups with some kind of accountability where, you know, you do something and then you kind of, if the next meeting you have, you kind of question whether you've actually done it or not. I think that's a great way for MSPs to focus on actually getting things done.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's one of the really good things about our space is there does seem to be somewhat of an attitude of a rising tide raises all boats, in that, to me anyway, MSPs seem very open and willing to share advice and ideas with not necessarily their direct competitors, but certainly other MSPs. It seems to be quite an open ecosystem in that respect. So and yeah, some of the online communities are very good for it as well. Like Tech Tribe comes up a lot. People get a lot of value from that, right? And this isn't me as a, you know, a shill for Tech Tribe, but that's again one that I pick up from speaking to MSPs, super useful. Maybe as you progress, then you do need to get involved in a peer group, like a True Methods or an Evolve or something like that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And great tips. And with that, we're at time. So that's flown by, but it's been really good to speak to you again. I look forward to catching up at DattoCon next week, although I don't know when the recording is going out, but it's next week for us. So it'd be great to go to a DattoCon in Dublin on your home soil and to see lots of great vendors and MSPs there as well.
Yeah, really looking forward to having such a big MSP event in my home city. It'll be the first time I won't have had to get on a flight to go to something like that. Yeah, so it feels like a bit of a treat. And thanks again for having me on, Chris. It's been a pleasure chatting to you today.
Yeah, speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Tate Talks, and thanks for Brian for being such a great guest and some fantastic callbacks to previous episodes. If you've not had a chance to hear them yourself, check them out by searching Tate Talks on your usual podcast app. Cheers, bye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs. Jump Cloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using Jump Cloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.